In Haiti, there's only double-digit ventilators for an entire country of people. And with a lack of basic infrastructure already, it's a really dire situation. And we decided, okay, we know that we can get overwhelmed easily. Let's take a step back. What can we actually do here?
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to COVID-19 Heroes. I'm your host, Lorraine Schneider, and today we'll dive into the COVID-19 pandemic in Haiti. I am joined by Jody Spangler, a medical student and founder of the nonprofit Say To Do. Jody has 10 years of experience in disaster relief and leading public health initiatives abroad. Today, she highlights the wonderful work Say To Do staff are conducting in Cité Soleil, a densely populated commune located in the Port-au-Prince metropolitan area in Haiti. In the age of social distancing, there's no better gift than a go gift. What is a go gift? It's a way to give loved ones meaningful, personalized gifts by bringing together friends and family from all over the world. Everyone contributes by writing messages that get added to a personal, private website. One new message gets delivered every day, so the more messages, the longer the gift lasts, and the receiver will always have their own little slice of the internet to look back on. Head to gogift.com/COVID, that is GOGYFT.com/COVID. GoGift, the gift that keeps on giving. Hi, Jody. Welcome to COVID-19 Heroes.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Jody, you are currently enrolled as a medical student and have led many projects addressing health equity. What led you to pursue a career in medicine and humanitarian response?
This is a total left turn. I was a travel and adventure writer, and I wasn't really planning on college at all before I found an interest in medicine. And I kind of joke that I'm the Forrest Gump of medicine and humanitarian response, because I just kind of have found myself in wonderful situations and have been someone who likes to say yes a lot when things are exciting and new. So I found myself working with an incredible physician on a trip who was running programs in rural areas in India, working to increase access to healthcare in her community. And just watching her with patients, it was the first time I saw how incredible the doctor-patient relationship can be. And yeah, it just really sparked something in me, and I just fell in love. And I came home and became an EMT and had an opportunity to work on a medical disaster response team. So I worked in the earthquake in Haiti, again in Nepal, and a few other response efforts. And yeah, I interned at Partners in Health. It kind of refined a lot of my thinking about health equity. So I've had a nonlinear path, but it's been a really wonderful one. Kind of led me to where I am now.
Yeah, definitely sounds like an exciting track to be on. So for 10 years now, you've had a special lens looking at the citizens and the healthcare system in Haiti. Where is it today compared to 10 years ago after the devastating earthquake?
10 years ago, hundreds of thousands of people lost their lives. And even before the earthquake, Haiti has had just a tangled history of occupation and governmental issues, foreign interference, lots of poverty. And then it's just this tremendous energy also that, and a pride really stemming back from revolution. And after the earthquake, there was this huge, massive surge, I'm sure you remember, of support and funding and excitement to rebuild. And the truth is that a lot of Haitians have yet to see those funds and programs or housing and services, despite all of that money being raised on their behalf. And there's still a lack of basic infrastructure. And yeah, so right now, I think 10 years later, there's a lot of action, protests against corruption. I've been so lucky to know and learn from incredible community activists and organizers who are just so inspiring every day. And of course, organizations like Partners in Health have been key to the positive side. Like Zami La Santé in Haiti is what Partners in Health is called there. And they partner with the Ministry of Health and started even a university hospital, which is an amazing teaching hospital, providing residency programs. So despite a lot of frustration, there are definitely shining lights everywhere in Haiti. And I just feel lucky to have so many incredible friends doing awesome work.
So while you were there responding to the earthquake, you met Samuel, a social worker and a logistics expert, and later on both of you teamed up. Why did both of you decide to launch Seidu, and what's the story behind its unique name?
Sure. Okay, so Samuel is beyond wonderful. I'm just so lucky to be able to call him a friend. So some of the mobile clinic patients even joke that he's like the mayor of City Soleil, where we work. So when we met, he was spending every second outside of his already full-time job running youth programs, checking on members of his community to make sure that they could get medications that they needed, organizing programs for children who lost parents after the earthquake. He was just a powerhouse and just relentless in his optimism and just vision for what could be. So I met him working side by side after the earthquake, and I had returned to Haiti a few times to help in a healthcare clinic. And looking around and talking to Samuel and a lot of friends, I realized how insane it was to fly me in and people like me, expatriate medical teams, when there was just so many young people who wanted to help their own communities and they just needed the opportunity to do so. Like they just needed the education or funding to be able to enact those ideas and dreams. So Samuel and I just slowly teamed up on projects together over the years, and we decided we could do something. So after years of working on projects, sponsoring and supporting the education of healthcare workers in Cité Soleil, we decided to go for it. So we made it official and became a 501c3. And then, oh yes, about the name. So the story behind the name Seidu, we were discussing unkept promises, like I mentioned earlier, made by NGOs. And someone just said, neg di san fi. And I have the worst Creole accent, so excuse me, but it means all talk and no action. And we decided together in that moment that we want to be all about thoughtful action. And we want to build trust and always do what we say we are going to do. And so we all have a say-to-do ratio. So that's where the name comes in. It's like a rough translation, but we all have a ratio of things that we say we're going to do and things that actually we do and get done. So we want to be one-to-one with our say-to-do ratio. And so far, so good. And that's just kind of the guiding ethos behind our organization.
That's certainly a great ethos to live by. What have you heard from Samuel over the last couple of months as COVID-19 has taken over the world? What are the stories on the ground in Haiti?
I remember talking to Samuel, and we both just had this shared feeling of tremendous overwhelm when we heard about the first cases in Haiti. And the sad truth is that this will disproportionately affect the poor and the vulnerable. And we see it already is here in the United States, even. And I fear that in Haiti, there's only double digit ventilators for an entire country of people. And with a lack of basic infrastructure already, it's a really dire situation that it's easy to get caught up in that feeling. And we decided, okay, we know that we can get overwhelmed easily. Let's take a step back. What can we actually do here? And we know that there are more confirmed cases. The last tally was over 100, but we can't really tell what the reality of the situation is. With a huge challenge in Haiti is it's really difficult to implement and follow the guidelines for prevention of the spread of COVID-19 in Haiti, in Cité Soleil in particular. How can citizens shelter in place in the dark without electricity? Or how can you practice social distancing in crowded, you know, heavily populated areas, sometimes without adequate ventilation, sanitation? There's like a precarious food supply already for a lot of folks. Most people live hand to mouth, and now they have to buy mandatory masks. You know, it's kind of, there's a lot of things and a lot of distrust of government, which can make it difficult to raise awareness about the seriousness of COVID-19 and this virus. So the team is working really hard to address those issues and to one by one say, what can we do for our community and what steps can we take to prevent this spread with what we have in front of us now?
And so in what ways has Seidu been able to help out specifically for COVID?
the first thing that we did, because there is a lack of running water in the area that we serve. So the first thing we did was install hundreds of hand washing stations. So I was so lucky to have been on calls with an incredible nurse who was part of the response for Ebola. And she taught us so much. And one of her suggestions that we implemented immediately was bucket hand washing station. So it's literally just a bucket and a spout with a big bar of soap so that everybody in the neighborhood can have access to hand washing and to be able to have proper hand hygiene. And we also have pictorial things just so people can wash properly. So that has been a huge effort and has been going really well so far. The next thing we did, we run a mobile clinic every month that treats hundreds of patients, and we go treat them where they are. So there's no barrier to care. And it's an entirely Haitian-led and run clinic. So we know that in order to practice social distancing, it's not responsible to have large gatherings of people. So we put together a 3-month supply of medication. And also I mentioned that food insecurity. So we've had massive food distributions along with that medication supply for our patients and community in Cité du Soleil. So that has been really successful so far. It's been hard to get to people, but our team is just absolutely incredible with their efforts. So we've been able to get to every single family that we serve. And the most recent effort that I'm so excited about is Samuel tracked down some absolutely fabulous local tailors. So there's been a shutdown of local business, and a lot of people are out of work on top of everything else. So we were able to hire teams of tailors to sew hundreds of masks to distribute in Cité du Soleil free of charge. And I'm just so happy and proud of the team for keeping people employed, organizing incredible community efforts. I just cry if I think about it too much, because it's just, I don't know, the team in Cité du Soleil and who I get to work with is just beyond.
And I think that's really what makes Cité du Soleil so special, is the fact that it is entirely Haitian-led and run, and really relies on the people on the ground and gives them work and opportunities to help their community.
The team in Haiti know what their neighbors need, and they have all the ideas to make it happen. So my role and the role of our team elsewhere and in Seattle is just to listen and ask, what do you need? I think so many nonprofits have wonderful intentions, but people know that what they need, and they just need those resources to make it happen. So there's so many interventions and programs that fail just because the people who design them have no cultural understanding, or don't speak the language, or aren't from there. For example, I know Samuel told a story about having to go out and rebuild bricks because there was teams who came to build and they didn't have any building experience. So they would build during the day, and then a second team would come out and undo the work and redo it up to standard. So there's so many examples like that. And I think one thing is just having humility. And I think sometimes as an outsider, it's easy to come into a situation and think, oh, this is so simple, and try to fix it. But I always tell, like, don't you think that somebody living there or living in a situation has thought of every easy or simple solution before you arrived? So I think asking, how can we help? The better thing might be, what do you need in order to get your ideas to fruition? So having the clinic and programs be entirely Haitian-led and run means that our programs are well-loved in the community, and that everyone has a hand and a voice and really a stake in how they're run best for the people who we want and aim to help.
So how do you think that COVID will continue to affect the country's already vulnerable healthcare system in the long term?
So it's hard to say, but I know that this is another moment where we need to invest heavily in capacity building. And a robust healthcare system is what is needed in Haiti and around the world, but especially to deal with a pandemic, you need a robust healthcare system, and it is an opportunity to build one as infrastructure, clinics, and hospitals prepare for this virus. I hope that that's the case. And I also think building that infrastructure for clinics and hospitals while we're investing in ways to prevent the spread of the virus, we also need to be investing in ways to build a stronger system of healthcare overall.
Now you are yourself in medical school. What are the current life events teaching you about medicine and public health, in addition to all the previous experiences you've had? And what are some of the lessons of COVID that you will take with you as a doctor?
So I think more than anything about being a doctor or public health or working in disaster response, this has taught me what I value. And I think working in disaster response in general really has taught me how to see really clearly what is important to me. And there's been so many moments, I know after the earthquake in Nepal, watching people go from door to door after losing so much and having the energy and compassion and community to walk around checking on everyone, making sure everyone has what they need. Watching Samuel be so dedicated to his community and making sure that every neighbor and everyone he knows is taken care of. I think that these moments teach us to really embrace our communities and remind you to cherish those things and connections and family members and loved ones that are so important. I know this is getting a little bit cheesy, but and COVID in particular is wild because you have to take a look at what you miss and what you aren't missing. And it kind of affirms my belief that we all have a chance to make things better every day, and that it's a choice, and it's sometimes a hard one to keep putting one step in front of the other in the face of these large challenges, and to just decide that we can do things to make it better.
I have the huge honor of every week getting to speak to a few COVID-19 heroes, and there's a lot of them out there. Who is one of your personal heroes during this pandemic?
Obviously, I talked ad nauseum about my COVID heroes throughout this, which are the team and Samuel, and just huge shout out to everybody on the ground at Say to Do who has been doing just remarkable things. And shout out to my husband, who's the raddest quarantine partner, working full time, and he's now like a preschool teacher too. But two people come to mind, and I think they're people who care way more than is reasonable and are generous probably way more than is reasonable. So the first is an ER doc who I consider a mentor. And he has, in addition to working his shifts, he tirelessly provides levity and humor to students, as well as guidance and knowledge. And he even secretly organized a distribution of silly socks to his fellow frontline workers. So if you go to a ER in Seattle, you will see a really awesome display of cartoon socks and questionable sock choices, but it's awesome. And he really just is an example of like making a choice to be a shining light every single day. And so that would be one of them. And then the second is my friend Seth. And he reminds me that even though nothing may ever be the same, our only choice is forward. And when we get to the other side of this and look back, we can ask ourselves, what will we have contributed or learned or created? And he's somebody who just never stops creating or contributing. So he's someone, I don't know, I aspire to be like him every day. So yeah.
Well, on that very positive note, I want to thank you, Jody, and thank Samuel and the rest of the Say Do team in Haiti for really leading the charge against COVID-19 in Cité Soleil. So thank you.
It's absolutely fabulous to be able to tune into your podcast and have this just ounce of positivity and swelling of pride for all of these amazing people. And yeah, it's just great. Thank you for everything that you're doing.
I'd like to close off this episode by thanking Jody, Samuel, and the nurses of Say To Do for their innovative and resourceful approach to slowing the spread of COVID-19 in Cité Soleil. If you would like to support or learn more about Say To Do, visit saydo.org or click the link in the episode description. If you liked today's episode, feel free to share it with a friend and show your appreciation of all COVID-19 heroes. You can follow the show on social media via Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Just follow the links in the episode description. Stay well, stay healthy. Thank you, and until next time, I'm your host, Lorraine Schneider.